Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Democrats are fielding the most diverse group of presidential primary candidates in history. It's a big, veritable smorgasbord of options. The professor, the prosecutor, the mayor, people of color, women of color, an openly gay millennial. But in poll after poll, more than half of primary voters have said that what matters most to them isn't the issues or identity, it's something else. It's electability. But what exactly does that mean? Voter Patty Rutka told NPR's All Things Considered just yesterday why she's throwing her support behind former Texas Democratic Congressman Beto O'Rourke.
Honestly, I think that he stands a better chance in part because he is a white male. I'd love to vote for a woman. I'm not sure that any of the women candidates will make it to the top in the way that I think Biden and Beto will.
In other words, in the age of supposed diversity, some Democrats think the best candidate for 2020 might be the person who looks most like the men on the money in your wallet. So we'll explore why. This hour on Point, what Democratic primary voters want and what electability means in the 2020 election. And you can join us. What makes someone electable to the White House in your eyes? What issues are important to you? And Democrats, are you looking for someone who has the best chance to beat President Trump? Or if you voted for the president, did Donald Trump already upend what electability means in America? Has he shown us that the best way to win in politics is to be unapologetically, unabashedly yourself? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, we're going to start today in Louisville, Kentucky with Perry Bacon. He's a Washington-based senior political writer for 538. Perry Bacon Jr., welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, Perry, can you walk us through sort of some of the data and the polling of the past couple of months that are showing this tendency of Democratic primary voters to say they're looking for electability? I mean, how much evidence is there for that?
There's been a few polls where if you ask people, do you want someone who agrees most with your political ideology and views, or do you want alternatively, do you want someone who is most likely to beat Donald Trump? You find Democrats are saying the second thing, most likely to beat Donald Trump over the first one, which is about ideology. I don't think that question is necessarily the most helpful because I'm not sure if a lot of voters could tell you what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's public policy differences are. I mean, they are all Democrats, so I'm not sure that tell. I think a lot of voters would probably say the Democrats generally have fairly similar views. So assuming that I can vote for a pro-Obamacare person who's going to work on climate change, someone who's for criminal justice reform, I want the most electable version of that person. So I think that sort of A versus B question is not particularly helpful, but that's what the polls are. But there is certainly some desire for electability and electability among voters.
Okay, so we just heard that piece of tape from voter Patty Rutka, who said it quite clearly that, you know, she's throwing her support behind former Congressman O'Rourke because she thinks he stands a better chance because he's a white male. So, I mean, is that what for some voters electability means, that is the Democrat, regardless of the policies that he in this case might have, that they're more likely to capture voters in the middle that the Democratic candidate would need to win the White House?
Yeah, I've definitely been on the trail and heard voters say things like, particularly, I like Senator Harris or I like Elizabeth Warren, but I don't think they can win in the Midwest or what have you is like usually the code that I hear. I think the idea is that there's certain maybe white male voters who went from Obama to Trump and maybe might more go from with like a Joe Biden than a Harris or Hillary Clinton or what have you. I think this has a lot to do with people seeing Hillary Clinton lose and maybe sort of analyze. You know, you heard that voter, I thought, was something I find when I'm on the road, too, is we've got a lot of voter. I would say we have too many pundits already, but now we have sort of voters playing pundit themselves, too. She was very much like, I'm going to vote for this person because they will play better here. I think this stuff is a little bit complicated, and I'm not sure I have that, you know, this is my entire job. up. I'm not sure I know exactly which candidates are most electable myself, so I'm always curious when voters are very confident of that. But I hear that more than I used to.
Well, so this is really interesting then, Perry. I mean, if you're knowledgeable, this is your world. If you yourself are saying you're not sure who's more electable, then when we use this word, and it has been all over the political coverage of the Democratic primary candidates so far. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, essentially in a town hall a couple of days ago, was asked twice if she's electable. I mean, what are we talking about?
I think this is a challenging and at times problematic concept. So in 2018, there were a couple of races I covered where this issue came up a lot. We're in the Democratic primary. It came up in Georgia, where Stacey Abrams was running against a woman named Stacey Evans, who was a Democrat. And the Evans supporters would kind of imply at times Evans is more electable. And I think everybody thought the code there was basically that Abrams is a black woman in the South, and therefore she can't win the general election. In fact, the problem probably was more likely that it's Georgia. So you have that dynamic of it. In Michigan, there was a man named Ellis, whose last name was El Sayed, who ran in the Democratic primary for governor there too. He lost, and his campaign complained about this. He's Muslim, and the campaigns complained that Democratic voters were sort of judging him and saying, you can't be the nominee because you're Muslim, and therefore it makes you unelectable. So you have these gender, race, and religion issues that come up. Like, in other words, I'm black, I would hope you all wouldn't let me. I would hope that if there was some evidence that, you know, 2% of your listeners would not listen because I'm a black host. This is as a random example. I would hope that would not discourage you from hiring me for the job. So there's a little bit of like, you can't change your race or gender particularly easily. So this electability concept, occasionally I worry, plays into sexism, racism, Islamophobia. The second part of it is there's been a lot of research about women candidates particularly.
Right.
And there's no evidence that women candidates win at lower rates than men do. So particularly with gender, it's not clear that there's actually any evidence that suggests female candidates can't win itself, too. So it's also like
across different kinds of offices?
In congressional elections we've looked at have been researched pretty extensively. I think the idea that we have one woman ran once and therefore we have proof that presidential elections are that different, I think, is like, you know, not something that I would use as very strong evidence. So I think the electability concept is a little bit fraught, one, and then I think we have limited evidence about it, two.
Okay. Well, one woman ran a couple of times, so N equals two, I guess, here. But
she ran once in a primary, so anyway, okay. That's why I don't think Democratic voters are opposed to women winning primaries since she won the next time. So
point taken. But since you did bring up this question about female candidates for the White House in particular, I just want to play a little bit of tape. But first of all, let me just give folks some background here, that there was a Monmouth University poll released just yesterday. And in that poll, former Vice President Joe Biden, even though he hasn't formally declared yet, he leads the crowded field of declared and potential Democratic presidential candidates. And then in the poll, it coming in second behind Biden was Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, and then South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. So yesterday, MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell asked New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand about that.
Why do you think white male candidates are doing better than any of the women candidates?
Well, I don't know, but this is a marathon and not a sprint. And I know that I have a vision for this country and the experience to actually get it done and a plan to get it done. My vision is for things as simple as national paid leave, as broad-based as national public service, really trying to get to full employment in this country, dealing with the underemployment that we have across the country, and making sure that people can get a better education, make sure that we have a national public service plan to get all kids through college with debt free.
So that's New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand yesterday kind of dodging on the question of white male candidates doing better than any of the women candidates so far. As a question mark. So Perry Bacon, hold on for just a second here, because I want to bring into the conversation Celinda Lake. She's joining us from Washington. She's a longtime Democratic pollster, founder and president of Lake Research Partners, a political strategy research firm, and author of What Women Really Want, How American Women Are Quietly Erasing Political, Racial, Class, and Religious Lines to Change the Way We Live. She co-authored that with Kellyanne Conway back in 2005. So Celinda Lake, it's great to have you back on the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
So first of all, just respond directly to that piece of tape we played of Senator Gillibrand kind of sidestepping this question about women this early in the campaign, perhaps not getting as much traction as men.
Right. I think there's no question that that's happening. And Perry gave a great analysis. But I would make a distinction between executive office and legislative office. Mm-hmm. If anything, women have an easier time getting elected to legislative office. And Democratic primaries are 59% women voters, and they tend to really favor women candidates right now. Executive office, it's tougher, and women have to prove that they're qualified. I think that if Perry and I each had a dollar for every person who's ever said to us, well, I'd vote for a woman or I'd vote for a person of color if they were qualified, and the white guys are doing such a great job, we understand why they're questioning the qualifications of the women and the people of color. I say that facetiously, obviously, I think women have to prove they're qualified. So there's kind of a wait and see. There's also more attention paid and more recall of women's mistakes so that women have to prove that they can handle the job, that they can handle the pressure. But what is unique right now, and I think we'll talk about this more, mm-hmm. is the weight that Democrats are giving to electability. And it is a very complicated concept. But voters, Democratic voters, 93% of Democratic voters despise Donald Trump. And electability is by far the biggest criteria right now.
Okay. Well, Celinda Lake and Perry Bacon, stand by here for just a second. We've got a lot of comments coming in online. Andrea E. says electability means not nominating a left-wing candidate who won't appeal to moderates. Response 2 tells us, what do Democrats really want from a 2020 candidate? A new political party that's not affiliated with the Democratic or Republican parties. Tom Good says, what do Democratic primary voters really want? Confidence that our democracy will again function based on liberty and justice for all. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about what Democratic voters really want in a presidential candidate and this question of electability and what that means in the 2020 presidential race and what it might mean for the most diverse slate of Democratic presidential contenders ever. I'm joined today by Perry Bacon Jr. He's the Washington-based senior political writer for 538. Happens to be with us today from Louisville, Kentucky. Celinda Lake is also with us. She's in Washington. She's a longtime Democratic pollster and founder and president of Lake Research Partners. And let's listen to one of the candidates that's been surging recently in this nascent primary season. That's South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. On Monday night during his CNN town hall, he said that personality still matters this early in the Democratic primary process.
It's important that we not drown people in minutia before we've vindicated the values that animate our policies. Because as Democrats, this is a habit that we have. We go right to the policy and we expect people to be able to figure out what our values must be from that.
That's South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg talking about values before policy on Monday night at his CNN town hall. So, Celinda Lake, before the break, you said accurately that this concept of electability is a complicated one. And Perry sort of began to walk us through that. But I want to get your view on it. What specifically does it mean in 2020?
It's really an interesting question because it used to mean something pretty different than it means this time around. This time around, it means beat Donald Trump. In the past, electability has been important, but what's been really interesting is whoever people liked, they thought was the most electable. So in 2016, Hillary Clinton voters thought that Hillary Clinton was the most electable. And Bernie Sanders voters thought that Bernie Sanders was the most electable. This time, more voters are giving it weight than have ever done before. We have, depending on the poll, anywhere from 38% to 52% of the voters who say electability is my number one criteria. Mm. But they don't necessarily think the person they like the best is the person who's most electable. And it's keeping the race more fluid. It's keeping the support softer. We asked voters, actually, what do you mean by electability? And they said two things. They said experience and strength. But I think that Perry is right, and I think that your callers have been right as well, that, you know, there's a lot of code there, mm-hmm. and we should be deeply suspicious of what people mean by experience, strength, and electability. But right now they say it's experience and strength and beating Donald Trump.
All right, so Perry, jump in here because, maybe it's not surprising, but does it seem rather different this time around that voters might see electability as the candidate that they don't necessarily personally really like? That seems cool, like quite a change. I mean, I think voters very frequently seek out candidates that they feel most akin to, whether it's in terms of values or policy or whatnot.
So I remember the 2000, Linda would know this better than I do, but I remember the 2004 campaign was a big theme was electability, the idea that, and in that context, it was like, is Howard Dean too left? And therefore, is John Kerry a more centrist person who can win the election? So I've heard this, so that's a concept then. In 2008, you had this dynamic where I think Obama and Hillary Clinton had to deal with this question about, is the country ready for a black person or a woman? And you had a lot of other candidates in there who had, I think John Edwards would at times imply he was the most electable. I think that meant he was a southern white man who would seem more centrist to voters because voters tend to view black candidates particularly as being more left than they actually are because of stereotypes about black politicians in general. So I think you've had electability before. I think in this race, what is interesting is because you had a lot of Democratic voters I talked to, their view is that Trump won as kind of a backlash to Obama and to Hillary. Hmm. And by that, they mean a little bit of a backlash to sort of the racial diversity of the country moving forward and the gender diversity of the country moving forward. So in their view, what they've internalized, and there is some evidence to support this, so what they've internalized is that the country moved this in the diversity track. Some voters in the Midwest didn't like that. So therefore, we need to pick a white man because that'll make the people in the Midwest feel better about themselves. And that's kind of what I think hearing a little bit. That's kind of how I see electability in this context, which is that you may actually, like a lot of people, like in 2008, people may have thought about Obama being unelectable, but they seem to have gotten past that. And I'm not sure that you're going to have that this year because I think people really, really hate Donald Trump, want to see him defeated, and have internalized the. And we've had a more open discussion about racism and race in the last 2 years. There does seem to be evidence of a backlash against Obama on some racial ground. So I think voters are sort of in this sea of confusing things and therefore weighing in upon them.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to let folks know that we're having a slight technical problem with our phone system today, so we're going to try and bring callers in here as we can do it. We know you're out there. We're going to get to you as soon as we can as we slowly overcome this technical problem. But in the meantime, let's hear what Minnesota Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar said at her CNN town hall on Monday about her desire to bring in middle-class voters who supported President Trump in the 2016 election and wanting to bring them back into the Democratic Party.
It is not just the middle of the country. It's really the entire middle class across the country that we have to have policies and ideas and bread and butter ideas that show that we have their back. And it doesn't matter the color of anyone's skin if we need to show we have their back. And the problem is that message got lost.
That's Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar on Monday. Well, let us indeed now go to the phones. Matt is calling from New Orleans. Matt, you're on the air.
Hi. So it's funny. I was just watching an episode of The West Wing last night where the subject was the electability of Matt Santos in that fictional world. And there was a lot of discussion of the presidential voice. Does he have the presidential voice? And what does that mean? And it really made me wonder, are there conflicts between what we tell ourselves that we want, what we prefer consciously, and what our subconscious is kind of pre-programmed to be looking for in an electable candidate.
And so, Matt, I mean, how do you answer that question for yourself?
I think that there could be some conflict there, frankly. And it was really interesting to watch, you know, in that show. Again, it's a fictional show that was based so much on what had happened in the Clinton years and what was happening in the present time in the Bush years. But Matt Santos was the diverse candidate. He was a Hispanic congressman from Texas in a field of all white males. And so it was interesting to see how, you know, 13 or 14 years ago that was grappled with versus today. But I'm looking for somebody who's going to be willing to be courageous and step out and have a voice that maybe not, that might not be so popular even on the left. And I think somebody who represents that to me is Senator Cory Booker. I think that he calls us to our better angels, and sometimes you know, that doesn't fly with folks who are your anti-Trump and that sort of thing.
Interesting. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Peter, who's calling from Buxton, Maine. Peter, you're on the air.
Greetings. I'm honored to be able to participate. I'm thinking this democracy is having a sort of I Have a Dream 2.0 event here. We're being challenged to judge people's character irregardless of the color of their skin. Now I'm looking at a fella in the White House with a persona that really irritates me, and I'm seeing some candidates on the horizon with a counterpoint to that persona.
Hmm.
And I think that is going to be a major factor in electability. When you see somebody who can show that they do care for this country in a socially honorable way.
And so candidates, I'm sorry to jump in there, Peter, but
I said such to Kamala Harris, and I feel that way about Peter Buttigieg. They live on a personal level, and everything they say politically is coming from a place that's deeper than a pedantic surface.
I see. Peter, thank you so much for your call. Celinda Lake, what do you think about what Peter said?
I think both of your callers have said really smart things. And I think that Democrats are really struggling, since most Democrats thought Donald Trump was unelectable. And look at what we have, and think he has been a horrible president and could easily get reelected. I think Democrats are really struggling with, do we replicate Trump or do we contrast with Trump? So do we elect someone who's different, who's strong, who's authentic, i.e. replicate the Trump factor outside the box? Or do we elect someone with experience, who's calm, who's bring people together, who's reasonable, kind of contrast with Trump? And I think Democrats are sincerely divided about which of these approaches is better. I'm frankly, and it sounds like Perry too, am confused. And I know for myself, I have my favorites, but I'd work for Dennis the Menace if he could beat Donald Trump. So I think a lot of Democrats feel the same way.
So Perry, chime in here on that, because I was just about to ask both of you, that didn't President Trump and then candidate Trump himself show that, you know, it's actually not that hard to upend what notions of conventional notions of electability are? And not just Democrats, but a lot of Republicans in the 2016 primary season, you know, before the candidates started falling away, they thought Donald Trump was unelectable too.
Like, in general, the political science evidence is candidates who are identified and considered sort of ideologically extreme by the electorate have a harder time winning. But for whatever reason, if you remember how Trump ran, he kind of ran as the pro-government, I won't cut Social Security, I'll give you better health care than anyone, along with the Muslim ban and things like that. He was kind of ideologically hard to place in 2016. And so I think that's worth considering. But he did seem like he was unelectable to some people and then won. In 2018, like, Wisconsin, the swing state of swing states, just elected for the second time Tammy Baldwin, who is a pretty left-wing woman who is gay. So it again goes to the point that I'm very dubious of these confident claims of who can win which states, because Donald Trump is president and Tammy Baldwin is in the senator of the swing states of swing states. I would say one thing is worth talking about here is there are five women running for president. And I do think, even though none of them are in the top two or three right now. I think electability has affected them in different ways. I don't think Tulsi Gabbard has the congresswoman of Hawaii has an electability problem. I think she's probably too unconventional, too right wing for some Democrats. I don't think that's about her. I actually think Amy Klobuchar is in terms of her resume, the candidate who has the best electability argument, male or female. Like, she has been winning in it's a blue but pretty close state in the Midwest. If voters really think Amy Klobuchar, who's been winning in this state and doing really well and won all these counties Trump won, is unelectable, they might just be wrong about that.
Right. But Perry, can I just ask you, though, because Celinda earlier did say that she didn't think that it's so easy to translate evidence from legislative wins to a race for the executive branch.
Yeah, I've seen some of that research. I'm not sure that I would say confidently that Amy Klobuchar has a worse chance than Joe Biden, who won in Delaware a long time. So I agree that the evidence is not clear, but Amy Klobuchar has a pretty strong case on her own in terms of does it translate perfectly? No, but does it translate to be vice president a couple times? So I'm not sure that the case is worse either. I do think with Warren, it's worth thinking about part of what's going on is she's a woman, and part of it is like she is to the left of most voters and on the left edge of the party. And then I think Harris does have the sort of most clear-cut, I think, just, and she's like left too, but the most clear-cut kind of voters have some lack of confidence that a black woman or a black Asian woman can be elected. So I think the electability question is worth exploring. Gillibrand, I think, is not popular among Democrats for other reasons. I think I would mention Al Franken among them, which is gender-related but not necessarily electability-related. So yeah. I think these five people are worth thinking about individually, too, in terms of electability.
Celinda Lake, let me ask you, we are very early even though we've already been in it for a while, we're still early in the primary season here. And before in the show, we heard Senator Gillibrand say, you know, you just got to keep slogging away and talking about your policies and what you stand for. And on Monday, Senator Elizabeth Warren, as I mentioned, was asked twice about her electability and in the CNN town hall. And one example she gave or one in one answer she gave. She talked about her first Senate race in Massachusetts, how she went from being behind then Senator Scott Brown by 17 points to winning by almost 8 points. Now, granted, it's a Massachusetts Senate race, but both of them striking this theme that, like, give us time, we'll break through. What do you think about that?
I think it's a really good argument, and I think we're going to see a lot of shifting around in the field. I think that people are looking for where to make an early win in the first four states, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada. And you may have one of these women or people of color emerge, 61% of the voters in South Carolina, African-American, for example, 59% of the voters in New Hampshire, female, and New Hampshire right next to Massachusetts, although next to Vermont as well. So I think that it is early. The thing that is, you also have all these governors that are running who have gotten no attention yet, which is an interesting question, all white men to date. But I think that we'll see somebody emerge. There'll be some surprise. Maybe we've already had the surprise in terms of Mayor Pete, but I think there'll be some winnowing very fast in March. And 40% of the Democratic delegates will be chosen by the early March primaries.
Yeah. So the primary schedule has changed rather significantly for the Democrats.
That's right. And front loaded.
Yeah. And California is that? I can't remember if California's in March now.
California is, and the California early ballots go out the day of the Iowa caucuses, which is much earlier than ever before, and a clear boost for Senator Harris. And Nevada being early is a boost for her as well. So anybody who says they know what's going to happen, they're kidding you. I don't think anybody knows what's happening.
But Celinda Lake, a little earlier you said that in analysis that you've done, that Democratic voters say that they're looking for experience and strength,
right.
You know, those could be coded terms as well. They're a little amorphous,
but I'm
just thinking, okay, experience and strength. How does Beto O'Rourke fall into that category? He doesn't have that much experience. How does Pete Buttigieg fall into that category? He's been a mayor in South Bend, Indiana. I mean, so are people still sort of projecting what they want these words to mean on the candidates that they think that can win Donald Trump? It still comes down to that, to beat Donald Trump, I should say.
Well, and I think it's a very interesting question that you're asking, because I think the women have been treated very differently than the men. And what's really interesting is you can be a very successful mayor, but of a city, respectfully, that only has 106,000 people in it, and you're treated as experienced in executive leadership. Meanwhile, you're a senator, a prosecutor, an attorney general, and you have to prove your experience. You win a race, you lose a Senate race, and you're considered very viable and strong and outside the box. You win a Senate race coming from behind, and you have to prove that you can win and that you're not too liberal to win. So I think there's a real double standard here playing out.
Right. Well, Celinda Lake and Perry Bacon, time for yet another quick break, but we are talking about what Democratic primary voters really want and what electability means in terms of the 2020 presidential race. We'll be right back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about what Democratic primary voters really want and this larger question of how those primary voters see electability or what they mean when they say they want someone who is electable for the 2020 campaign. We're joined today by Celinda Lake. She is a longtime Democratic pollster and founder and president of Lake Research Partners, a political strategy firm. Perry Bacon Jr. also joins us. He is the Washington-based senior political writer for 538. Happens to be in Louisville, Kentucky today, and we have a lot of comments coming in online. Peter is saying, I am so disappointed that this conversation amongst my own Democrats is even happening. Peter says, I realize that some people who want to make the election about gender or race, but the race should be about who is the best person for the job, all capital letters there. This is the person who will beat Trump and serve the country. Isn't that what should matter? That comment there from Peter. Let's go back to the phones. Stina is calling from Waterford, Michigan. Stina, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think that voters in general want someone who's passionate, who is unapologetic about their beliefs, who's firm, consistent, happily articulate, not angry, and who represents the values that in poll after poll on issue after issue reflect what most Americans really want, despite who's in the White House right now, which has to do with, you know, gun control and climate change and a whole host of other things, affirmative action, et cetera, et cetera. It may be that the persons running who best represent those criteria are white men. That's not their fault.
Why do you say that, Steve? I'm curious. Why do you say that? Why do you think that it might be that a white man best represents those criteria?
At the candidates out there, people seem to want to narrow it down, and I can understand why, to, you know, what they're calling the B's, right? Beto, Buttigieg, Biden, and all of them happen to be white males. I wouldn't hold that against them. I'm not certain that the country is, frankly, ready for a woman. I want them to be, but I'm not certain that they are. Among the women, we have excellent candidates. I love Elizabeth Harris. I think...
Stina, do you mean Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris?
Well, I'm sorry. I like them both.
Okay. Stina, I'm actually going to take it back from you there because you've said some really interesting things. Perry Bacon, would you like to respond to Stina that she says that it might be that these the values of sort of calm but passion and representing sort of the policy issues that she believes most Americans actually agree on, that the person who best represents that might still be a white male?
Yeah, the quality she named might describe 10 people in the field. They might be the white guys, the women. They might be Cory Booker or Julian Castro who are in a different category. I think one thing is going on here is I think there are a lot of candidates people like. When I talk to voters, they're often like there are 7 or 8 Democrats they like. I think, for example, Vice President Biden, I think one reason he's doing well in the polls is a perceived electability, but also a lot of Democrats really like Joe Biden. They voted for him with the ticket twice. A lot of people I meet just like Pete Buttigieg. They like the way he speaks about politics. They like his values. I agree with the caller in the idea that if people choose a white man, I don't think that means that they've rejected the female candidates as such. I think there might be a case that they prefer a male candidate. The dynamic now is complicated because I can't tell. A lot of voters are telling me they're sort of informally screening out the female candidates, and that to me is more problematic. But I think a lot of people genuinely like Beto Biden. Like Bernie Sanders, we know, is a white man, but I don't think that people are there because he's a white man. He has a passionate following of people who like what he says on public policy.
So, Celinda, like, why is it that it seems like people, I mean, what makes Beto, Biden, and Buttigieg more likable than Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when Perry was talking. And I was thinking, I can remember when I supported Hillary Clinton and I used to go into meetings almost apologetic and say, you know, I like Hillary Clinton. I actually really like her. But I was almost defensive about it. So we know from the work, and the Barbara Lee Family Foundation has done a tremendous amount of work on this and located in Boston right near you, that likability is a different quality for women. First of all, it's much harder to maintain. Secondly, voters are perfectly willing to vote for a man they think is qualified, even if they don't like him for executive office. They will not vote for a woman that they don't like, even if they think she's qualified. And then we all know that no one has ever refers to a man as too strong or a B-I-T-C-H or whatever. So likability is a bit of a double bind for women, and it's harder to maintain. And we've tested that. When women are delivering critiques, when women are speaking passionately, as the previous caller really wanted, we often find that women are rated as speaking louder than they are, more aggressively, more negatively, even though men may say exactly the same things in exactly the same tone. So this likability issue for women is a bit of a double bind, and we see it in other realms. We see it in politics, but we see it in business. We see it for women executives. Maybe we see it for women newscasters. I don't know. You'll have to tell me.
That's for an off-the-record conversation, Celinda.
Just to be clear, I thought I said people like Joe Biden, not they didn't like Kamala Harris. I think that
Okay. No, I was clear about your comments. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, she was referring to the our caller. But since we mentioned Elizabeth Warren here, let's just hear a little bit of what she said at her CNN town hall on Monday when she was asked about sexism in American politics. And she referred to her 2012 U.S. Senate race in Massachusetts and how her experience from that race influences the way she speaks to young women about running for public office.
I'm going to be in this race. I'm going to make something count every single day. So every day when I saw a little girl, I would come up and I'd usually get down. I'm a teacher. And I would say, hi, my name is Elizabeth, and I'm running for Senate because that's what girls do.
Senator Elizabeth Warren on CNN on Monday. Let's go to Brett, who's calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Brett, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. So I guess coming from Michigan, I think talking about the electability from a gender perspective, it often gets forgotten. At least I don't hear it that two out of the three past governors we've had have been women. They've been white women, but still women leading our state. And then I also wanted to touch on two. Bernie won our primary back in 2016, Bernie Sanders, and he also won Wisconsin, Kansas, Oklahoma, states that then Trump won in the national election. And I guess for as much as we discuss like the middle class working vote, I think for electability of a candidate like Bernie Sanders, who I support, I'm often scared of losing the upper 20% voters in like wealthy suburbs who I feel like might secretly vote for Trump or not vote because, you know, afraid of taxes or afraid of losing their wealth. But that isn't brought up. And I feel like we hyper focus on the middle class vote. But I guess my question is, from the perspective of ideological electability, a labor forward candidate like Sanders, who has performed well in the Midwest, and we have the data to support that, I often feel like it's kind of left out of the conversation in terms of like that that ideological piece of it. And then also, I feel like a woman getting elected, I mean, look at states that have elected women to lead the state, like Michigan. So those are just my
right.
points.
Well, Brett, actually, thank you so much for your call. Picking up on this idea of Midwest voters, let's go to Eric, who's actually calling from Largo, Florida. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I just want to make a point that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by over 3 million votes in 2016 and lost the Electoral College because she didn't campaign in key states where she just decided that it wasn't worth it to go. Trump's election is more or less a mistake because she didn't do what she was supposed to do and go to those states. And so as far as electability goes, we've already proven once that a woman who many people say is unlikable, which, all right, we can accept that maybe, but she did win the election. And so the question of whether a woman can win has already been answered.
Right.
So a woman like Kamala Harris or Amy Klobuchar or Elizabeth Warren, the question isn't whether she's likable or not, is whether she's competent or not. And all three of those women are highly competent,
yeah.
regardless of race or gender. And even in Tampa, just yesterday in Tampa, in what is the Deep South and a conservative state, a gay woman was elected mayor over a white man by a margin of 77 to 23
yeah.
or something like that.
Eric, you know, forgive me. I'm going to take it back from you because you've brought up a very, very important point, and I want to hear both from Celinda and Perry about it. Eric, thank you for your call. So Perry, when Eric said earlier that, you know, Hillary Clinton proved she won the popular vote overwhelmingly. She was very electable. The machinations of the Electoral College led to a different outcome. Respond to that.
I guess I don't agree. The Electoral College is the system we have, so she lost. So I would say that, but I think the caller is hinting at some things that I think are important here, is just that we not only talk about electability in the code of white men, we tend to, in our head, have it in, there's a Wisconsin swing voter who's like a white person, who is, who's probably older, who maybe voted for Obama in 2008, maybe voted for, we're not, what about 2012, but then voted this, we talk about the Obama-Trump voter a lot mm-hmm. in the Midwest, because those are the states. But there's two other kinds of voters who swung in 2016. One is the people who voted for Obama, but also then voted for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson, or the third party people, which is like a 3% electorate or so. There's another percentage of people who did not vote at all voted in 2012 for Obama, didn't vote at all in 2016. So you have and a lot of those people were black or Latino or under 30. So one way to be electable is to sort of be a centrist person who appeals to Obama-Trump voters. Another way to be electable is to appeal to younger people, minorities, maybe people disaffected from politics. You could see Senator Sanders, Senator Beto O'Rourke, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker. You could see their electability case being, I can bring new people or people who are disengaged from the process
yeah.
back, as opposed to I can win the Midwest in this Sherrod Brown, Joe Biden style of way. And I think it's worth making sure we unpack that electability is just not only one of the ways Obama did so well was there was a very high black and young turnout for him. Mm. And you could imagine other candidates doing that.
Right. So, Celinda, I take Perry's point about the Electoral College is what we have, right? It's ultimately those numbers that determine who's going to be in the White House. But thinking back to what our caller was saying, I mean, he was basically saying Hillary Clinton proved that she could get the votes. The problem was that she didn't campaign aggressively enough in key states. So, I mean, are we missing the mark in even talking about electability as a question? And what Democrats ought to be really focusing on is simply just on-the-ground efforts campaigning in key states.
Well, that's a really good point. And who will campaign and the quality of the operations, I think, is something that people will be assessing as part of electability and the grassroots politics in those early states. But what I took from your previous caller that I think is really needs to be lifted up is we have not just the mayor of Tampa, and that's a very exciting victory, but we have a record number of women who have won mayoral races right now in big cities. cities like New Orleans and San Francisco, and young African American women that people said, oh, they weren't viable, and they ended up winning. We know from research, and the Michigan governors are very important in this regard, that if a woman has held an executive office in a state, the next woman will do, all other things being equal, about 2 to 5% better, because voters will think, oh, okay, well, we didn't go to hell in a handbasket while she was in charge. Maybe another one can get a chance. So I think this fact that we have all these women, these voters who have voted for a woman executive, whether it be Hillary Clinton or their mayor or their governor, is going to help boost a lot the profiles of these women. Yeah. But right now it's perception, and those factors aren't being talked about by the press or by voters very much.
So, Linda, we've got one comment here that's come in online that I want to hear your response to. Stephanie Lurk writes us from Iowa. She says she's in Iowa and intends to caucus for the Democrat whose policies align most with her personal hopes. But she's not sure that whoever that is will wind up ending up being the presidential nominee. Mm. And here's why. She says, I felt that Hillary Clinton was as electable as a person could be, but I was not prepared for the vitriol hurled at her by the left. I am now paranoid about how they will react to whoever the Democrats put forward for the presidency. So is that something that the candidates need to pay closer attention to, this potential vitriol from the left wing of the party?
Well, I think Perry said it best, which is, I think these labels are pretty destructive, actually. And I hope that we don't focus on these labels or trying to categorize people. Every single Democrat out there supports some version of Green New Deal, i.e. clean energy, climate change, and infrastructure investment. Every single Democrat out there supports some form of ensuring that we have affordable Medicare, health care for everyone, and affordable prescription drugs. Some call it Medicare for all, some single payer, some something else, some buy-in, some whatever you call it. So I hope we don't focus on labels. I hope we focus on values. And I think there is a great deal of consistency across all of the candidates on these values.
Yeah. Well, Perry Bacon, we've got about 30 seconds left before we have to wrap up. So last thought goes to you today.
I have watched, there was an interview Gillibrand did on MSNBC yesterday, and she was sort of asked, how is sexism affecting you? And my concern is with that kind of question. Journalists are paid to ask people questions and paid to ask smart questions. I hope Barack Obama was never asked, are Americans too racist to vote for you? I mean, what is he supposed to say? And so I hope we get better in terms of asking the candidates smart questions about electability, or maybe not asking the candidates questions about electability at all.
Asking the voters what they mean by that and what they really want. Excellent point, Perry. Perry Bacon Jr., Washington-based senior political writer for 538. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me so much.
And Celinda Lake, longtime Democratic pollster and founder and president of Lake Research Partners, a political strategy research firm. Celinda, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.